Tango Tango Papa 2061, December 2nd, 2020.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you today from home. I've been home for the past several days. I actually have to go back to work tomorrow on December the 3rd. So it has been a month since the last podcast. And let's just get this right out of the way, right up in front. In the last podcast, I said that I thought that Donald Trump was going to win in a landslide. Well, I believe he did win in a landslide. The problem is that there was massive vote fraud that occurred in kind of a select number of targeted states that are sort of known for, in particular, cities that are really well known for Democrat vote fraud shenanigans. And that is precisely what happened. And looking back, you can see that this was kind of already in progress. You had the so-called mail-in ballots that were being mailed out of these places. There were months worth of stories where people were finding ballots in ditches and multiple ballots and all kinds of different shenanigans. And then Joe Biden himself said, I think it was in a presidential debate, that the Democrats had amassed one of the largest vote fraud organizations in the world, and he basically called it that. Now, of course, everybody said, "Oh, he just misspoke." He told you, you know, maybe it was a Freudian slip. You know, the guy's not quite all there. That's a tale for a different time. There are some signs of maybe dementia that have set in. But in any case, into Joe Biden. In any case, they were saying, they came out and they said, well, there's going to be, where it's probably a red mirage and then the blue wave. So we had the red mirage. Everybody went to bed thinking that Trump was easily winning everything. And then all of a sudden they stopped counting the votes in the middle of the night in every one of these cities. And then they started with because they had already engaged in electronic vote manipulation. But I believe that the Trump landslide was so large that then they had to resort to ballot stuffing in the middle of the night, which they did. And it's provable. There are hundreds of witnesses that have come forward, maybe thousands by this point. And yet you see they're fighting this every step of the way to try to get Biden inaugurated as president. So it's not over yet. I know there are some people that want to believe that it's over just because the media, Facebook says, with every Facebook post that has anything remotely to do with election or politics, it has this propaganda piece underneath the post saying that the AP has projected Biden the winner, as if we need to have that drilled into our heads. Well, if we really needed that, if we didn't need it, if it was such a foregone conclusion, then why all the propaganda? Why all the necessity of this continual fawning over Biden? Why the need to repeat the lie, the message over and over and over again? Because if something's a foregone conclusion, then you don't need to do that. You know, if you're in control of something, then you don't need to do all this extra messaging. So here's what I believe. I believe that there was massive voter fraud. I believe they're actually proving it. And I believe in the end that, and we're going to find out here pretty soon, I believe that in the end, Trump will be re-inaugurated as president, and Trump will be the president for the next 4 years. Now, I might be wrong. I was not wrong about the landslide. So if you want to, you know, believe that I was wrong about the landslide, you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast. You know, I've had people that, and I haven't really posted a whole lot on Facebook, but I have people that are still attempting to get me to, you know, somehow keep sending me articles or different things that they find in the news to convince me that I just have to accept Biden as president. Well, you know, and I, you know, kind of come back every time and tell them, you know, I'll accept whatever the final outcome is. I'm perfectly able to, willing and able to live with whatever the actual result is. But it's not over yet. The AP or whoever else, New York Times, even Fox News, does not declare who the president is. That goes through a legal process. And we're not, there's a process in the Constitution. And the Constitution is actually behind Trump. If you look at the Constitution and you kind of halfway are able to objectively understand it, Trump has the Constitution on his side. Whether you like that or not, there's a lot of people, or some people, I wouldn't say a lot, but there are a number of people that just do not like that. They don't like Trump for whatever reason. They don't like Trump politics, whatever. Well, you know, if that's the case, why the hell are you listening to this podcast? You know, that doesn't make any sense. I don't spend my time I don't waste my time listening to a bunch of left-wing podcasts, and there's plenty of them out there. I don't waste my time consuming a lot of media that don't believe that I'm getting anything out of. And I certainly am not getting anything out of arguing with the ideologically possessed. And, you know, there are people that try to get you to argue over propagandistic facts, propaganda. And there's a lot of propaganda. And so that's why I've said for the longest time, I've said for years, turn off the media. At this point, it's worse than it's ever been. As I've long said, Trump sort of separates the wheat from the chaff. And that's been true ever since he's been president. And it's continuing. Now it's gotten to the point where even Fox News has fallen by the wayside. We see which side they were actually on. And, of course, they've lost their audience. MSNBC and CNN now vastly outperform Fox. So Fox News is, you know, they might as well just close up shop. Because they're not even getting the viewership of CNN and MSNBC at this point. So, in any case, I just, I've turned all of that stuff off. I rarely even at this point open up email and look at email headlines. I will watch a few YouTube videos. But for the most part, I'm just going to wait. I have sent money to Trump before the election, sent money to the Trump campaign, and I'm sending money now. I've sent it several times since the election. You know, I'm going to do my whatever small part that I can to help defend, and it's not Trump at this point, it's defend the constitutional process, the vote integrity. At this point, we have to clean this obvious vote fraud up, and it is obvious, unless you're ideologically possessed, then it's you reject it. You know, the whole thing with ideological possession, and I've gone over this before in the recent past, it depends, possession depends on values. You know, what are your values, your underlying values? And your underlying values are not necessarily the ones you're conscious of. You can't just simply say, well, I'm going to start valuing this over that, or I'm going to stop valuing this over, or, you know, this over the other thing. You can't do that. Your value system doesn't really work that way. A lot of it, you can change your values, I believe. You know, you can come to value different things, but you can't just willy-nilly command yourself to do it. How often has it worked for you to command yourself to let's say you've decided, I'm going to get exercise, I'm going to do my New Year's resolution, so I therefore command myself to, from now on, I'm going to, you know, do the treadmill all the time, or I'm going to go through this exercise routine X number of times a week. How well does that work? Tell me that. It doesn't. You can't change your values that way. Now, a lot of values are unconscious. They're subconscious. You're not even aware of them. You know, the conscious part of our mind, what we think of as the conscious part of our mind, is really just the tip of the iceberg. The vast majority of what goes on in the mind is subconscious. When you believe you've forgotten something, you haven't really forgotten it. Your brain is still in your brain somewhere, still in there somewhere, but you have simply passed from being a conscious, you know, somehow accessed by the conscious mind to the, it's gone into the subconscious. It's no longer available for conscious recall. You haven't forgotten things. So, in any case, I'm waiting to see what happens. As I say, I've turned all of it off. I've even turned my text messages off because I was getting a lot of, you know, I'll be honest, I was getting a lot of texts from the Trump, and still am getting texts from the Trump campaign asking for donations. And, I don't want to unsubscribe from it, but it was, you know, a bit much. And as I say, I am donating. Maybe like once a week, I'll donate some more money to it and, kind of go from there. As I say, do whatever little part that I can. But we have to clean this up. We have to fix our vote system. We cannot tolerate fraud. The vote system must have integrity, or we have no country. People have to realize that. And I think part of the reason we're going to all have to kind of go through this, this is one of those things that just really, I think, tests one's mettle, as it were. We're just going to have to go through this. And the question to ask yourself is, what is my own moral integrity? You know, because it's easy to point your fingers at other people and say, well, they have no moral integrity. Well, what about me? What motivates me? What kind of moral integrity do I have? And those are the kinds of questions we should be asking ourselves. And in fact, we should have been, as I said, even at the beginning of this virus thing, this was a great opportunity for self-examination, to examine one's own motives. It's a perfect time. because a lot of the stuff got kind of shut down. A lot of the recreational stuff, outside recreational stuff got shut down. Perfect time to examine, you know, for self-examination. Should be doing that anyway. But a lot of times I know people don't. People aren't perfect. No one's perfect, including me. So, but, you know, that was a perfect time for it. And this right now is also a perfect time for it. What part have I played in the downfall, not only of myself, but the potential downfall of the people around me? Because, you know, you have to realize we're networked creatures. We're not isolated in some Alaskan wilderness all by ourselves in a cabin chopping wood all summer so that we can stay inside all winter, you know, and killing game all summer so that we can just hang out in the cabin and eat all winter and stay warm with the wood. Very few people can actually exist that way. And certainly very few people could exist in that manner and maintain their sanity. We actually need each other. We need each other for feedback. I'm actually writing an article about that. I haven't finished it yet. But we actually need each other for, you know, to provide feedback to each other, to maintain our sanity, as it were. But we live in a network, and what we do, each one of us does, affects the other people around us. They say that there, and you can actually prove it, that there's about a 6-degree separation from any two individuals in the world. You can find connections between people, and so you're about 6 people from every other person in the world, which is, it's amazing, but that's actually provable. So we have an effect, you know. So if we're lying to ourselves, you know, certainly if we're lying to ourselves, then we're lying by definition. We're lying to those around us. And every time we do that, we sort of tilt, you can think of it this way, we sort of tilt reality towards, or, you know, tilt existence, let's say, is probably a better way of putting it. What is that? Who is that? No, I'm not answering that. Okay, that can go away. We're sort of tilting existence in the wrong direction. Yeah, so... You know, you're either tilting it a little bit towards hell or a little bit more towards heaven. If you know, kind of depending on whether you are really telling the truth and facing the truth yourself versus lying to yourself and lying to the people around you. Pretending to yourself that you're a really good person. You know, everyone wants to believe that they're a good person and they're in the right. But the fact of the matter is that there's an element of larceny within every human being. The line between good and evil goes right through every human heart. And that is really true. And we, as human beings, need to face that. We need to face the fact that we have the potential, you know, if we were in Nazi Germany, we wouldn't be Arthur Schindler, you know, being, trying to save as many people as possible. Let's face reality. The vast majority of us could, if placed in the right circumstances, would be the concentration camp guards. And we would end up justifying it in our own minds. We really need to face that, the fact of that potential for evil within us individually. It's not just, you can't just say, well, it's the group, it's they did it. No, you would do it too. So, you know, this vote system, I don't know. One of the things that could be done, you know, we have a jury system, you know, where you get called to jury duty, and, you know, now there, you can get out of it. Let's say that you're traveling or whatever, or you're ill or whatever. It is possible if you've got the right set of circumstances, then you won't be called for jury duty. But on the other hand, it's your civic duty to do that. If you get called and you're not otherwise tied up, then you should do the jury duty, if you know. And so maybe we should have voter duty that would work in a similar manner, where you would be called into the at an election time. You'd be called to maybe man the polls or help count ballots. You know, and of course there'd have to be exceptions. If somebody wasn't physically capable of doing it, or you know, there could be exceptions. Certainly, there would have to be in such a system. But it would be, you could perceive it as your civic duty to work with as you know, in some sort of voter duty capacity. Because, you know, the problem you have these so-called professionals doing it, well, yeah, that's probably wrought with problems. Then you have this Dominion voter system, Dominion with, you know, and then the smart, so-called Smartmatic software, and, you know, it's a crock. It was developed, the thing was originally developed for Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, so he could, quote-unquote, adjust the election results the way he wanted them, so they would come out the way he wanted. And that was the same thing that we ended up using in, you know, a bunch of different states. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And people just accepted it somehow. We have this illusion, as I've often said for a long time, we have this illusion that we watch all this news and that somehow they report these things and they just keep repeating the same stories over and over again. You know, and every so many hours they get a new set of stories that they repeat over and over again. And we have this illusion that we're really informed when in fact we're not. We're actually just being propagandized with certain information, and we just kind of shut down, and then it's easy to just, you know, the stuff that we're not being told or that's not being talked about, it's just ignored. Or it's, you know, somebody says, oh, that's conspiracy theory, and we all think, oh, conspiracy theory. And the reason that works is, to a large extent, is because we're ideologically possessed. We have the wrong value system. We don't have a really good, if you've got a really good value system, you're very resistant to ideological possession. But if you have the wrong value system, if you don't have the right values in place, and as I say, many of these values are kind of unconscious. If you don't have the right values in place, then you are subject to ideological possession to varying degrees. Now, I believe human beings, we're not perfect creatures, and therefore we are all possessed in certain ways, or subject to possession, and it really is possession. You can think about it in terms of a spiritual possession, but it's really the same mechanism. The human brain is structured in such a way that we put faith into things. And so, in other words, another way of thinking about this, if we don't have the right value system, then we put faith, we're vulnerable to end up putting faith into wrong ideas. And we put our faith in things all the time. And it has nothing to do whatsoever, if you say you're an atheist or an agnostic or whatever it is, has zero to do with that, because that the way the brain works, you put your faith into various things, And if you've got the, you know, you got the wrong values, wrong set of values that are kind of governing your mind, then you are subject to putting your faith into the wrong ideas. And, you know, those ideas become dogmatic. You put your faith into the wrong dogmas. And then the pieces that don't fit, you just discard them. It's easy. Oh, that's just a conspiracy theory. Vote fraud didn't happen. That's just a conspiracy theory. Well, believe that. If you want to believe that, go ahead. Go right ahead. At some point, you know, you can't really bend. You can try to bend reality to make it kind of fit your narrative. You can sort of bend reality, but it always snaps back. And when it snaps back, it can be brutal. And it often is brutal. So you bend reality at your own peril. You screw up your ability to perceive the world around you at your own peril. And you do that by, how do you do that? You do that by lying to yourself. You do that by actually, you know, kind of falsifying your existence. You know, you lie about this thing and you lie about that. You lie to yourself and you say, I'm really a good person. And you lie to yourself. And every time you do that, you're warping your ability to tell the difference between right and wrong. And that's not a very smart thing to do. It has nothing to do with intelligence, level of intelligence. So, anyway, I've got a couple of longer comments from Joel. The first one was, I think they're both about the election. The first one was, I believe he recorded that, on the day of the election or maybe the day after. So maybe probably on the 5th, I think, is when it was sent. And then he sent another one, you know, somewhat more recently, within the last week and a half. So we'll start out with the first one. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here. And unfortunately, looks like we were both wrong. We'll find out. There's still recounts happening. There's some lawsuits being done. But in any event, I think it is, I'm not saying that it's all completely lost, a complete lost cause for Trump to win re-election, but it pretty much is. And the Democrats don't scare me. They never did to begin with. Ultimately, I think there's a segment of our population that thinks the president has more power than he has. Usually it's the Democrats. But a lot of times I think it's us too. We seem to forget that there are three bodies in our federal government. The Supreme Court, their legislature, and the executive branch. And we have control of the Senate, as far as I know. There is a remote chance we may have to, we may not, but it is a remote chance. And whereas we didn't gain power in the House, we as in the Republicans, we did gain progress there. You know, there the where the They had eight seats go from Democrat to Republican. You know, and then further too, I don't know if you've heard about, there was apparently, and actually I think it was CNN or something, that there was like a congressional Democratic caucus meeting, and they'd end up going out on CNN or something, if I remember right. And there were a lot of more moderate Democrats that were kind of angry at Pelosi. Because she basically let the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the AOCs, the Rashid Tlaibs, the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party, gain prevalence, and therefore some people lost their seats because of that. I, quite frankly, I think there's a possibility Pelosi may not be the majority leader in the House. She may not be the Speaker of the House. She may not win it. And I think for that very reason, because of how she reacted and how she helped drive some of the stuff that we didn't like the Trump impeachment and all that stupid shit. It all boils down to it. While we may not have won the presidency, we've won some more mind share, I think. May not, it's not done yet, you know, but it's progress. It's progress. I think it's important progress. It's that's going to happen. But ultimately, you know, do I think my life's going to change a lot because of Joe Biden's in the White House? No, I don't really think so. Am I happy about it? I'm not happy about it. I'm even less happy that Kamala might be president. You know, because let's face it, Joe's not getting any younger. And Joe didn't really handle himself all that well. But I can't tell you what we're not going to get, and that's what all the Democrats and the Joe Biden supporters think they're going to get, and that's unity. You know, when they flat out will reject anything that a Republican says, or a conservative says, or even some libertarians for that matter, for what reason do we have to unify with someone like that? That's what they don't get. So... ultimately, I think it saddens me a little bit that things happened the way they did, you know, and there is a remote chance that he might win at this point still. But more and more, though, I think people are starting to see the media and even the social media guys like Facebook and so on and so forth for what they are. I am very impressed by the growth in the last week of MeWe and Parler. I'm on Parler as well now. And what is even funnier is I have had two people I never think I'd see on MeWe or Parler. And that was my current pastor's wife and my previous, well, he's still my pastor. I still consider him one of my pastors. But the pastor I've had for the last 10 years has moved on to another church. But I'm still friends with him. And I'd still do almost anything for the man, mostly because of friendship, not because of what he says or anything. But in any event, I never thought I'd see them there. I had, you know, a lot of people, Parler and MeWe are new for me and for people like me, like you, and for other folks. Like I had a, there's a lot, been a lot of people in the tech community that went to MeWe when Google Plus went up. And I'm very encouraged by it. You know, in fact, I'm noticing Parler itself was having some performance issues because there's so many new accounts being created. I have a friend who is a member of many firearm groups on MeWe, and one of the groups that he was a member of in the last week went from 15 members in the group to 1,500. So Facebook, Twitter, their days may be numbered. Their days may be numbered. And I think CNN, MSNBC, and to a lesser extent Fox News, they're starting to go by the wayside. And I fully support the idea, like Trump said, he said this before the 2016 election, but I think he's probably going to end up confirming it. But I think Trump actually has plans that he's going to start a conservative media company. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think the mainstream media, people are largely done with them, especially with how they treated some of the states this year. You know, like how early they called Virginia for the Democrats. Like almost 24 hours early. Not quite, you know, but you know, people are starting to see the hypocrisy of them. So, I have a lot of confidence that things are going to go all right. And I think, too, that depending on who, you know, who is still in office at the end of this coming 4 years, I think whoever it is, if it's Biden or Kamala, they're done. You know, I hope I'm right. May be wrong, but I think people are starting to see how stupid some of their arguments are. You know, when the thing that just really pissed me off a little bit was when they would take some of Trump's comments out of context. You know, it's like they take the one piece they like, ignore everything else, and went with that. So, anyway, I'm optimistic. I didn't mean to leave you a 10-minute message, but here we are.
Thank you, Joel. So that was Joel's first message. I really do think, and again, I may be wrong, but I really do believe that Trump will be serving his, you know, he's going to be serving in the next 4 years as president. And so we'll just have to wait and see. It's not over yet, as I say. I think it's going to be a kind of a messy process. I think it's going to probably end up in the Supreme Court before it's over. And maybe we'll know by Christmas. So it's possible we've got a whole nother month, or, you know, I'd say the better part of December. Today's December the 2nd. So let's say 23 days more of this before we actually know. So we'll see. In any case, I was talking about before ideological possession, and I wanted to kind of make sure that I got this idea in there. As far as values go, how do you, you know, because you can't just say, well, I'm going to change my values. You can't do that. You can't just change your values at will. That's not possible. So what can you do? The only choice that we can really, we have as human beings, as far as moral choices, go, we can either resent or not resent. And to resent is easy. We've all done it. We've all ended up resenting, you know, falling short of the glory of God. We've all done it. And so the choice is to stop. And if you can actually stop, and you have to want to stop. It's not something, well, I, you know, think I want to do it, but I just enjoy it too much. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have the ice cream anyway, type of thing. You've got to actually stop. And if you can actually stop, if you can actually get rid of that as a response and get rid of, you know, and cut you, and the only way you can really do that is to just willingly recognize that you've resented. And it always starts with parents. People, and I have people to this day, they'll say, well, I've never hated my parents. Well, let's just examine that a little bit more carefully. Did you ever feel that your parents did something unjust towards you? And if you did, how did that make you feel? Can you feel that right now? Because the chances are really great that if you can feel that right now, if you're able to still remember that, or, you know, those times where your parents, where you felt that they were unjust towards you, chances are the resentment is still there. And that's really what you need to look for. You know, as if you could wish them dead with your thoughts, as if you could, if you were God and you could just strike the mental thunderbolts and strike them dead. That's the best way that I can describe what resentment is. It's not simply some emotion. And it's not, you know, simply getting mad or whatever. Becoming angry. There's something that precedes that, and that something is, you can think of it almost as an electrical charge, is another way to think about it. And if you can actually recognize the presence of that and get rid of it, change your response so that you don't resent in the first place, and you get kind of, you know, get rid of all past resentments, then, you know, you get rid of it in the past, you get rid of it in the present, and the future takes care of itself. If you've really gotten rid of the resentment in the past and you've gotten rid of the resentment reaction in the present, then the future, it just automatically takes care of itself. But the amazing thing is that also changes your value system. Because the presence, I can say it this way, the presence of resentment prevents you from having the correct value system, even if that value system is unconscious, it precludes it. And so that's how you can change your value system, and then therefore you're able to become resistant towards ideological possession. But you have to be willing to give up resentment, and you have to really want to give up resentment as a response. Because that literally is how we play God in our own minds. And if we're busy playing God in our own minds, then we've got, you know, as human beings, we've got the faulty value set. We're not God. We're the creation. And the free choice that we have is to recognize and eliminate the inferior resentment response. Stop playing God in your own mind. And that's how you do it. You don't do it simply by saying, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. Yeah, right. It doesn't, you know, simply mouthing words doesn't account for anything. So, anyway, getting back to the Trump thing, I think that we will see Trump reelected, and I do believe that massive, massive, massive voter fraud took place, and I think it's all in the process of being revealed. Much of it has been revealed already, and we have a lot to go. And I think we're going to end up seeing some famous people in orange jumpsuits at some point. So we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. But beyond Trump, we have to straighten out the election system. Because we can say all day long that we're going to, you know, we're going to get rid of these Republicans or whatever. We're going to get rid of these politicians. Well, if you have a landslide election and you can't elect the president that you want, then how are you going to elect anybody? How do you know that the congressmen and the senators, you know, and the House representatives, how do you know that they were actually elected? How do you know those votes are true and correct? You don't. You just don't. So we have to clean that system up, and I think we should go back to a paper ballot system. I think there's the temptation. See, the problem is human beings, we're all kind of subject to temptation. You know, so therefore, you know, there are probably very few of us. If you know, let's say you're out and about somewhere and you find a massive pile of money. And how many of us could, resist the temptation to just take that money or take some of the money if it didn't appear to belong to anybody? How many of us would be able to resist that? Probably, if the truth is known, not very many. And at the same time, so you think of this, let's say you're in a situation where you can manipulate votes, and you can manipulate votes in the favor of your candidate, whatever party let's say you're ideologically possessed by one party or the other. You find yourself in a position where you can easily manipulate the votes. Some people, that would be a giant temptation to do, and it apparently is. What you have to do is go to a paper system and with all kinds of checks and balances. And even then, you look at the average bank. You know, for example, there's a lot of banks and there's a lot of fraud. You know, I wouldn't say it's probably a lot percentage-wise, but it is a common problem. It's a very common issue for banks to have fraud. And so banks, therefore, they've got casinos are another place that, casinos have very tight accounting systems because they're dealing with massive piles of money. And so they've got all kinds of cameras watching the people that are counting the money. You go to, I don't know if you've ever watched any of those documentaries there's documentaries you can watch about casinos, and they talk about not only the glamorous casino part of it, but also there's in a big casino, there's always a money counting room. And you better believe there's all kinds of cameras and that people are watching each other. But even in systems, let's say in a bank where people know they're being watched, you've got digital currency now. You've got where it's just so easy to just change numbers or move some here or there. And certainly with the piles of cash, they're constantly counting those. And they have all kinds of elaborate accounting systems to try to prevent fraud. But it still occurs. They still, it's still found. It happens in businesses all the time. Unfortunately, it's a very common thing. So what you have to do then to overcome that, or to mitigate it at the very least, minimize it, is come up with systems that sort of minimize the temptation. So minimize the temptation to steal and cheat. And I'm afraid electronic voting systems are, that's just too much. We need to go to a, back to a paper system where they have to physically count it. And then I would have cameras everywhere and people watching and all kinds of rules regarding, you know, whether, you know, once we start counting, we're not going to stop and, you know, it's going to be done such and such way. And this, these are the rules and, you know, it can't be, certain rules can't be violated or the whole thing just gets, we have to start over. You know, if the thing is deemed, you know, the rules would deem the thing corrupted. So, in any case, I could go on and on, but I do think that Trump will be president to the chagrin of many. And of course, the media has made it worse because they've tried to really media Facebook and Twitter included. You know, Facebook is ridiculous, and you mention anything about anything remotely to do with the election, and they've got some sort of AP has determined that or projected Biden as the winner. You know, and they just, and that's on YouTube as well. Just utterly ridiculous. They've taken a bunch of, you know, eliminated a bunch of channels that were popular. Some of them were very popular, and YouTube just got rid of them. They're gone. Goodbye. Because we don't agree with you. By the way, before I go back to Joel's other comment, I don't know. It's been more than a year ago. I bought the first season of Westworld, the HBO television series. And a friend reminded me about there's a season two and a season three. So I went ahead and bought the Blu-rays for that as well, for season two and season three. And so I've kind of binge-watched most of it. I still have a number of episodes in season three to go. But it, you know, there is a lot of violence in that show, and I don't particularly, you know, care violence one way or the other. They could probably do without all the violence, but nonetheless, the show does have some quite interesting ideas, particularly about existence. You know, and they've done, and I'm not saying that they have the philosophy right. You know, why do we exist? I don't think they've gotten it particularly right, but they do ask some interesting questions, and if you watch something like that, or like if I watch something like that, I can kind of ignore the violence or whatever. And once in a while, they'll kind of end up posing some interesting questions. And then, so in the season three, for example, you could say it's a sub theme or maybe a theme of the season so far is, I guess maybe it's a sub theme, but from what I've watched, but the idea is you have this computerized entity, or, you know, or creation that's sort of watching every person, you know, and collecting all kinds of data about them, and then beginning to predict, not only predict what their behavior would be, because that's happening already with us, but this system in this Westworld season three is also manipulating people to not only predict what their outcomes will be over their entire lifetimes, but also to manipulate those, you know, to manipulate the results. And I think they're sort of hinting at what, you know, Facebook in particular has kind of done things like that, where they're experimenting on people to see if they can get them make people depressed or change their attitudes or those types of things. And I don't know. I guess if someone was really obsessed with Facebook, perhaps you could change them in some way. But you know, it won't happen to you, and you have to be. It takes two to tango, in other words. So you kind of have to already be a willing participant in order to be manipulated. In order to be manipulated, you have to kind of want to be manipulated, even if it's unconscious. You have to, you know, because how much, you know, because it's one thing for an online service, but how much more powerful is it if you've got a parents or a spouse that are really manipulative, you know, which that's actually quite common for that to happen. Well, you know, how much power do they have over you? The people that are actually around you that you actually engage with end up having more power over you than potentially just some online service. But it does kind of pose some interesting questions, interesting themes, and so I'm looking, you know, I'll probably watch the rest of the you know, the remaining themes or the remaining episodes of season 3. I'll probably watch the rest of those this evening. So, because I'd say I'm probably already maybe 2/3 the way through the episodes of season 3, and then, you know, and I don't know. I'm guessing there'll probably be a season 4 at some point. I don't know where they are in their production, and I imagine their production's been screwed up by the virus. And by the way, so we need to get to Joel's next comment, or we're gonna have a really long podcast if we're not careful. So, but anyway, I listened to part of it, and Joel's in the next comment. He's talking about the virus. So once again, here is Joel.
Good morning, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here from Ohio. The state of the suggested advisory. Anyway, now here it is. It's the week before Thanksgiving weekend, I should say, before, and I'll be having a Thanksgiving. I think we're going to my sister-in-law's. I am not sure, but the one thing I've always done, even if, especially if we're just going to like a small thing, like we might be doing with my sister-in-law, is to make a turkey myself, just because I like to make turkey. Anyway, but I'm coming to you. I'm talking mostly right now. I'll be talking about the pandemic, and here in Ohio, the governor has put a curfew in place after between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m., which I'm still trying to figure out what that actually does, but actually hurt people who work shifts. never mind that there's only been all. We used to have two or three different stores that were open 24 hours a day, and for months they have not been. They've started gradually expanding their hours. Meyer, which is a family-owned store here in Ohio, Michigan, and several other neighboring states. They used to be open 24/7, but they are not now. They kind of went back from the 9 to 5, because for a long time they were only open till like 8 or 9, they expanded it first to 10 p.m. and now it's till midnight. And then they have exclusive hours.
well, supposedly exclusive hours for senior citizens, like in the early morning. But past 10 p.m., you got Kroger, you got Walmart, and you got Meijer. Many of them are only open another hour after that. And then many of them are open. There's at least one that's open till midnight. And basically, they shoved everyone in, between two certain times. Whereas if the 24-hour stores had been open 24 hours, I still could have gone shopping at 2 in the morning. See, unlike many people, before the pandemic, I socially distanced. I might go to a theme park, but I would try and find one of the least busy times of the week to go, so I didn't have as many people to deal with. So that's one thing. So that's not doing anything. But in Franklin County is at this purple stage of spread, which, whatever that means. And I'm not sure what that means. Because if you see the scale for Ohio for their COVID levels, it's ridiculous. You read it, and there's not a lot of detail on either level. It's not counting how many people are getting it in a day. It's not counting how many people are dying from it in a day. It's stupid. But in any event, our county, and there's several others in Ohio that's basically put out a stay-home advisory, not an order. And not one county sheriff in the whole state of Ohio has come and said that they're actually going to fine people and enforce it. And in most cases, there's no fine anyway. They're treating it like a winter weather advisory, which I think is equally dumb. But what I'm going to address here, though, is wear a mask, don't wear a mask, stay at home, don't stay at home. Wash your hands, don't wash your hands. Well, wash your hands, but that's just gross. But what a lot of politicians are afraid to actually tell us, and even a lot of the scientists, is that there may not be anything that we can actually do to prevent the spread of this virus. That's a belief I have had since probably May. Maybe even March last year. Or this year, I should say. Seems like last year. But a lot of people want to blame this on Trump and his lack of response. And yet, Project Warp Speed has us mere months away from two different vaccines that could help end the pandemic, which, let's be honest, that's the only thing that can end it. A lot of people want to point to what Singapore and Korea and Japan have done, and in a lot of cases, those countries themselves have always been germaphobes, and they have a completely different culture. Hence, when you go to Japan, you have bidets. Now, granted, European countries have them too, but in any event, it's a different culture. For the United States, contract tracing is an anathema. Nobody probably wants it. I would hazard to even say that probably Democrats don't even want that. But that's the answer? People refuse to look at this country. I'm going to say this now. If you think it's okay to give up your right of movement because of a virus, do us a favor and leave. And I know you don't think that way. But, if you think that you have to give up freedom to combat a virus, I don't want you here. All right? Especially if you can't seem to actually look at what others are saying. You know, like I've seen people say, well, economy before people, when they talk about lockdowns or non-lockdowns, and I'm like, no, wait. Economy is people. If a business cannot make money, they cannot afford to pay you. If Schaefer shut down, stopped delivering food, which I know they won't, but if they did, you wouldn't have a job very long, much longer. And that would hurt you. And then I had someone come back at me and say, well, it's better that someone loses their job than that they die. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. If someone loses their job, they cannot afford food to feed their family. They cannot afford medicine, necessarily. Yeah, they'll go on unemployment. May go on unemployment for a little while, but that's very little while, all right? And it's never what they made before. So they still won't have the money to do those things. So guess what's going to happen? People are going to die. There's my phone reminding me it's time to go to church. That's actually what I'm doing. So, but now there are points where I will debate people, and there are points that I won't. And sometimes it's pointless to debate people, especially if they are a staunch liberal, or I'm going to say it, a staunch conservative. What we need is a return in the middle for most of this country, because that's the only way I know to deal with things. You know, where we consider each side, pick what we like, pick what we don't, and move on with life. But restricting speech, like the Facebook does, they say they don't, but then when you look at, I think a percent of people who donated to political causes who worked for Facebook, when 87% of them donated to Democratic, either candidates or ideas, how can you be objective? That's like I had another friend of mine tell me that Ohio Department of Health is apolitical. I'm like, you're joking, right? To say a government agency is apolitical is like saying people don't exist. You know, politics is in everything. As much as I hate it, it's in everything. It's in everything. It shouldn't be, yes. But people cannot just take their biases and their beliefs and leave them at the door. In a lot of cases, right? You can put systems in place to help that, and other things too. Journalists used to have that kind of a system. They don't anymore. But debate is healthy. As long as, everyone has at least a little bit of empathy for everyone else, and empathy doesn't mean emotion to me. It means caring, because I think that sometimes you can address a liberal's cares. And achieve a conservative victory. All right. Not all the time, obviously. That's I want to say that the time I'm talking about is probably 10%, maybe, if that. because honestly, we're not all that different. We all want the same things, I think. So hopefully this comes through. I'm driving. I don't know if it will or not. Hopefully it does. Take care, Tom. Stay safe. Happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully you get some time off next week.
Thank you again, Joel. So, let's see. So I'll talk about what you talked about last there. Being able to talk to, you know, it's not just liberals. People that are in, it's really when you say, well, somebody's a staunch liberal or the staunch conservative, it means they're ideologically possessed. You know, and it really is, you know, a good idea to, if you're really not familiar with what ideological possession is, it's a really good idea to, you know, kind of make the effort to understand what it is for someone to be ideologically possessed. Because it's, you know, you hear that term, you hear me talk about it, and, you know, until I really understood it myself, kind of wrapped my own mind around it, it was just a term that I heard people used, and I was, it kind of gives you a term that is one of those terms that sort of gives you a vague impression. Like, you know, when people talk about inflammation, you know, in your body, you know, and that sounds, that always kind of sounded nebulous to me. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, maybe their intestines are, you know, because, you know, have, it was like these people, you know, there are ads, and I don't know if there's so much, I'm sure they're still around, like on the internet or wherever, where they'll tell you that, well, you may have old corn or something that is years old that's kind of stuck in your intestines, and you need to cleanse your intestines. You need a intestinal cleanse. That's nonsense. You know, and those still, you know, so it's easy for something like inflammation to sort of go into that mental category. Well, inflammation is something that happens all the time. It's necessary for you to have it. It's an immune response. If you cut your skin, there's some inflammation, you know, the redness and the maybe a little swelling and some pus, that's inflammation. And there's a certain amount of it that you have to have or you're going to die. But you can have too much of it. And it really is a thing. And it really does affect your health. And, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So you don't want any more of that than you need. Kind of the same way with insulin. You know, you need a certain amount of it or you're going to die, but you don't, if you've got too much of it, the way probably half of the people in the world have maybe 5 to 10 times too much insulin and they don't know it because, of, you know, they're eating poison all the time, poison, you know, all these excess carbohydrates, they're poisoning themselves with it, with the excess carbohydrates, and they've got all this excess insulin that's kind of floating around, and it's really poisonous. It's toxic above a certain level. The dose makes the poison. And so that's, you know, it really is something to be curious about and understand, kind of wrap your mind around it. So people are ideologically possessed. And it's, once you understand what it is, then it, and you really wrap your mind around it, and you've encountered it probably your whole life, where you, especially if you try to debate, you know, things with people, you it's easily recognizable when you're talking to somebody. And then all of a sudden you see that they're ideologically possessed. What I've, like with my parents, for example, they were kind of indoctrinated into the Democrat Party, you know, way back when. And of course, they were around long before I was. And it's possible that the Democrat Party, well, I know the Democrat Party then, you know, you go back into the the 30s and the 40s and maybe even the 50s, the Democrat Party was completely different than what we, you know, the party today. But yet they're sort of still kind of caught in what it was, let's say, in the 40s and the 50s, or maybe even the 60s, although it changed radically in the 60s. But, you know, particularly, I'd say by the mid-60s, it had radically changed. But, and it's changed more since then. So, people are ideologically possessed. So, like with my parents, I just, several years ago, I cut off any kind of trying to reason with them. Because, you know, reason, when you try to reason with an ideologically possessed person, they just become more emotional. So it's the line of attack, the only thing I'll discuss with my parents, besides just ordinary day-to-day things, the only thing I'll actually discuss with them, you know, is along the line of values. And that's it. I won't talk politics, and I refuse to get sucked into debating propaganda. You know, and there's plenty, as I said before, there's plenty of it. We're surrounded by propaganda more than we've ever been in before. We're just, you know, the media is awash with it. So I won't get sucked into arguing over propaganda. Propagandized facts. Just, it ain't going to happen. So that, you know, that's, but, you know, it's fruitless to really try to reason with someone that's ideologically possessed. You know, I don't know. I'll tell them at some point. I'll tell them, I believe you're ideologically possessed. And, you know, of course, that goes in one ear and out the other. Because a person that's ideologically possessed typically doesn't want to know that they're ideologically possessed, and they believe that the ideology that they're possessed by holds all the answers. You know, and of course, the more totalitarian the system is, of the, you know, the set of axioms, let's say, of a particular ideological possession set, the more totalitarian it is, the more difficult it, you know, the more possessed they are, the more difficult it is to try to break through that. It's probably, in many cases, it's probably impossible to break through that. Other than you just kind of go for the values. Talk about, you know, what value systems. What are the values? What are the underlying values? There, you know, and those things are worth discussing. And not, you know, and forget about, you know, as I say, if somebody's ideologically possessed, just, you know, nothing you can do about that. They're just possessed, and that's that. But you can discuss value. You know, if you're going to discuss anything with them, discuss topics about basic values of right and wrong. Those are great topics to discuss, because oftentimes, as in the case with my parents have, I believe, a pretty good set of values. But those values are actually in conflict with the thing that they're ideologically possessed by, namely the Democrat Party. And, you know, so, but, you know, go for the values. If you're going to talk about anything, go, you know, talk about values. So, and oftentimes, you know, people will just kind of reject those sort of approaches as well. that they kind of don't want to hear it. Because it, you know, and the reason they don't is because it threatens their system of, you know, it threatens their ideological possession. It threatens their identity and to a large extent. So, now regarding the pandemic or the so-called pandemic, I think, you know, the virus, yeah, the virus is a virus. It's going to make the rounds. You're not going to be able to stop it. There's some pretty good evidence that in places where they haven't enforced mask mandates and all kinds of curfews and what have you, that have zero difference in infection rates with places that are, doing these lockdowns and masks and all those curfews, which I don't understand that. Who came up with the idea of a curfew? What, you know, why? Why is it, somebody shopping at Walmart at 2 o'clock in the 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning going to increase the possibility of a virus? I that doesn't make any sense to me. You know, the only reason you have a curfew is like if you're trying to stop rioting from happening, or if you've declared martial law, then yeah, you're going to lock people down and, you know, prevent rioting. But to prevent a virus spread is ridiculous. Now, my parents are in South Texas right now, and my mom is, in particular, is just scared. Of course, she's 95 years old, and she's just scared to death at that virus. But she sits, and I, you know, of course, I've told her, don't watch that television, turn it off. You know, watch something else. Turn the propaganda channels off. And she watches them anyway. So she, you know, of course, they've tried to make that as dramatic as they possibly can, so that people, you know, the people will watch. So they'll watch the ads, click on the ads, or at least have ad displays when you're reading the stories online, which she does. And, you know, so she's ended up being kind of programmed to be terrified that she, you know, about the virus. And then, yeah, if my parents got the virus, that would be bad. So yeah, they do have something to worry about, but at the same time, masks aren't going to save them. You know, masks are not a salvation. I'm sorry. They don't, you know, it's like trying, unless you're wearing an N95 mask, all you're trying to stop a sandstorm with a chain link fence is a great analogy. Because those virus particles are way smaller than the microscopic weaving of the typical mask. You know, and all you might be able to stop yourself from spitting on the other person. You know, we spit when we talk, and I'm sure we've all had the embarrassing occurrence where we were talking to someone and we're fairly close with them, or physically close proximity with them, and either they spit on you or you spit on them, and that's kind of embarrassing. You know, do you even acknowledge it if they've spit on you, or if you know that you just spit on them? Do you acknowledge it? Do you bring it up or what? You know, so it's kind of an embarrassing thing. I think we've all had that experience. So it could stop that if you want to get right up. You know, if you like to be about a foot away or 2 feet away from the person you're talking to, or 3 feet away. You know, it might stop you from spitting on each other if you both have masks on. But other than that, they're not doing much. So, you know, the virus has to make the rounds. So, you know, yeah, I guess there's, you know, and there are therapeutics, and there are, you know, as such as the hydroxychloroquine that the media has demonized. Because they want the pandemic, they want things disrupted, they want the drama, They love drama because drama, they think drama is more captivating. The more drama, the better. If it leads, it bleeds. Or if it bleeds, it leads. So they want the drama. They're all about drama and getting you to watch the ads, among other motivations that are nefarious. So, you know, and then they're doing all this testing, and they're you need to get tested. If you're going to travel, you need to get tested. You know, and so there's all these stories now I'm hearing about people that are getting tested and they don't have any symptoms. Well, what's that about? Well, there's a thing called a PCR test. And it's not even really a test. They're using it as a test. So they take the samples and then they run it through this PCR process. It's a process, really, not a test. So it's a test would be, well, you either negative or positive. Well, this process, depending on how you can think of it, the process is sort of a volume control. The higher they crank that volume up on this process, the number of cycles that they put it through, whatever that means, they can end up with a positive result. And so I think it was on a YouTube video. There's a story about a couple of guys that decided they were going to get tested for the virus. I don't think they didn't have any symptoms, but they were going to get tested anyway. And so they were at the testing place and they signed up, and then they found out it was going to cost them $125 a piece to get the test, and so they just left. You know, and they thought that was the end of it. Well, a few days later, they got a thing in the, because they registered, they got this thing in the mail. They were notified, you're positive for the virus. They didn't even get tested yet. Oh, here, they're going to notify them. They're going to count them as positive. So it's ridiculous. So that's the only, you know, they're coming up with, they're really falsely inflated test numbers. Then hospitals have a big incentive to list as many possible, many deaths as possible that have to do with the virus, because they get like $30,000 extra. And I've heard of cases, there's a case actually in my own family where, she would have been a cousin, for the last few years she had Alzheimer's, and she, you know, it got progress, you know, and in this case it acted pretty quickly, and she got progressively worse to the point where she was in pretty bad shape. Well, what did they do? They twisted that around, and they gave, somehow she ended, you know, they gave her a test or something, and they, you know, they had her in a care facility at that point, and I'll be damned if they didn't, you know, kind of end up listing her death as related to this COVID virus. She died of Alzheimer's, and I don't even know that she had any symptoms of the COVID. So it's, you know, just utterly ridiculous. This is widespread fraud. It's another type of fraud, and that's the real problem in our society, is the willingness of people to give in to the temptation to lie, to give in to the temptation to steal, to give in to the temptation to cheat, because they think it's an advantage. They're gaining some advantage. At least they think they are. And that's a problem. Because that's how the society deteriorates. That's how the society eventually goes down. That's how civilizations eventually end. And it's because of this decline in, you can say, it really is a moral decline. but it's a decay in, you know, in, or it's an increase is another way you can think about it, an increase in the number of people that are actually lying to themselves and others. So what do we do about that? Is it their fault or is it my fault? And really, you go back to the biblical injunction, you know, you pull the log out of your own eye before you, kind of paraphrasing this, pull the log out of your own eye before you, you know, you, and try to see, pick the speck out of your neighbor's eye. You have to start with yourself. You have to look at yourself. It's up to me to look at myself, to look at my motivations. Because if I'm lying to myself, then, you know, what good is it, does it do to me to for me to point an accusing finger at other people? That's the real problem in our society, is too many people are willing to lie, to give in to temptation. And it begins, the proclivity to give in to temptation begins and ends at the willingness of individual people to lie to themselves. So it's time for us to come clean and kind of face ourselves and realize that it's not just other people that are the problem. It's also, the problem is potentially also with us. So, anyhow, this is getting kind of turning into a long podcast, so I better be bringing it to a close. So hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.